Minimum wages, immigration, guns, the environment. They'll continue to dominate the legislative agenda come the arrival of a new administration. While Congress continues its long summer recess, the presidential campaign, weird as it may be, intensifies. Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins joins me with the emerging legislative agendas of the candidates. David, good morning. I'm just going to air in the afternoon also, so let me say that again. David, it seems like one candidate has a lot more detail about her legislative agenda than the other candidate does.
Yes, Tom, you've given it away with the pronoun, but I think it will come as only a small surprise to our listeners to know that Hillary Clinton has her website is chock-a-block filled with relatively clear enumeration of what she would do as president. She articulated much of that during her speech on the last night of the Philadelphia convention, and her plenty of her advisors were in Philadelphia and available to talk with me and other reporters about not only what her aspirations would be, but what her first year in office, what her first 100 days priorities would be, standing, of course, in very sharp contrast to the Republican nominee, whose own speech was devoid of any mentions of Congress in Cleveland. He never mentioned Congress. He never mentioned any particularly legislative proposals. He, in fact, the famous quote, which I think is we're going to hear many, many times, "I alone can fix this," he spoke extensively about using his own presidential authority, executive authority, to accomplish much of what he says he wants to do as president.
And to what extent are the platforms of the parties connected to the candidates? Because I read both platforms, and Republican platform is much more detailed than what you can find at the Donald Trump website. The Democratic platform kind of matches what you find, at least to a greater degree, at the Hillary Clinton website.
I think that's a good point. I think that the platforms generally are symbolic documents more than governing documents. The Republican platform, I paid attention to the drafting of the Republican platform somewhat. It was a dog's breakfast of special interest proposals and culture war fights that really bear very little resemblance to the kind of things that Donald Trump has talked about. I mean, there were discussions of, the sage grouse and its protection under the Endangered Species Act, and lots of discussion of anti-gay rights stuff, for example, that contradicted what Trump himself said from the podium, which is, one of his most sort of surprising moments during his speech was his embrace of gay rights, and his which was totally contradicted by the platform. So I would say I really wouldn't look to the Republican platform for an indication for what Donald Trump would do. I would look to the Democratic platform as just an echo of what we know Hillary Clinton is talking about.
And with respect to federal civil service reform, I don't think either one has a lot of detail on that. In Washington, there's been a lot of talk about civil service reform.
That's true. It is. I think in that case, the place to look is to the records of the two vice presidential candidates. I think you and I have talked about Mike Pence in the past, and he has been sort of on the predictable Republican side, but paying attention somewhat to issues of civil service and government operations. Just to reiterate, I mean, he's sort of on all the predictable Republican bills about freezing pay for the government, shrinking the size of government, opposing efforts to expand labor rights for federal workers. In Indiana, he did support, as the governor, merit pay for employees, but generally not seen as an unusually unfriendly for a Republican, but sort of most federal unions and so think of him as just a typical Republican. On the other side,
equally predictable
as a Democrat from Virginia, a strong a strong supporter of expansion of federal civil service protections for employees and pay raises. And, so each of them mirrors their party on this front.
We're speaking with David Hawkins, senior editor at Roll Call. And, of course, Congress is, if not the senior partner, at least a co-equal partner in any of their plans.
That is exactly right. in terms of an agenda, I think beyond the platform, many Republicans are looking to the agenda that Paul Ryan has put out, this so-called A Better Way agenda, which is a quite explicit blueprint for governance. I think the general expectation is that if Donald Trump were elected, that would probably mean not only a continued Republican House, but also a continued Republican Senate, and that then he, Trump, would look to, and Congress would expect that Trump would look to them to drive the legislative agenda. But if that does not work out, I'd say strong use of executive authority. On the other side, on the Hillary Clinton side, were she to win, probably is still a Republican House. We think probably a Democratic Senate, that if she were to win, she would probably have enough coattails to create a Democratic Senate. So a divided government, actually she would be the first Democratic president since the 1880s to begin her administration with a divided Congress. So maybe not a lot of hope for big-time legislative achievements. And she, too, has sent a signal that after trying to work with Congress for a reasonable amount of time, she is also prepared, like Donald Trump, to be an assertive user of executive power. So in that sense, sort of counterintuitively, they actually agree on something, which is that they're not going to wait too long for Congress before being muscular users of presidential power.
Which, I guess, is a statement in and of itself for people that wonder whether that's a good trend for either party to be able to have ever-expanding use of executive power.
Exactly right. I mean, the general trend in the last 100 years is that each president is a little bit more assertive in the use of executive authority than the previous one. Barack Obama came to office not really sending too many signals that this was the way he was going to operate, but of course he has, as his administration has gone on, as the political tide in Congress has moved against him, he has become quite robust in his use of executive power. So each president seems to build on what happened before, and I think we can expect that in the next 4 years as well.
At some point, we'll have to put a throne in the Oval Office.
You can be in charge of that.
All right. And also, while Congress is out, there is the whole Zika flare-up and what CDC is having to do, sending crews to Florida and so forth and taking action to tell people where they should go and not go. And there's money left that the administration is charged with not using. And so do you see any kind of congressional signals that might come during this recess? I guess technically they're not totally in recess.
They are technically not totally in recess. There is the somewhat vaguely regulated power to reprogram, which is maybe some of your listeners understand how that works, which is the administration can, an agency or department can come to the appropriate appropriations committee members in Congress and say, we have this money left over, we'd rather spend it on this than that, and within certain vaguely enforced limits, that's allowed. But I think the big money debate will have to wait until after Labor Day. It will once again, there will once again be a spurt of debate as to whether the first continuing resolution, probably the one that's going to keep the government operating after October 1st, will at last, in the eyes of the people seeking this money, free some of it up.
I guess it's going to be a long, hot summer in more ways than one. David Hawkins is senior editor at Roll Call. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Tom.
You can read more and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.